Welcome back, everyone. This time, we're going to be diving deep into scaffolding. But before we get too far ahead of ourselves, I think it's important to define what we even mean by scaffolding.
Definitely.
Because I feel like it's one of those terms that like gets thrown around a lot in education, but it can be kind of easily misunderstood.
Yeah, I totally agree. Scaffolding, to put it simply, is a support system that's temporary and helps learners tackle tasks that might be just a little bit out of reach. And it's important to note that scaffolding isn't about like making things easier, you know?
Right.
It's not about like lowering expectations or anything. It's about providing the right support at the right time. So that eventually students can do things they couldn't do on their own. It's like we're strategically building a bridge to help them get to this new understanding.
Oh, I love that analogy of a bridge. I think that's so appropriate because it really is about like, you know, empowering them to actually like construct their own understanding.
Yeah.
Not just like handing them the information.
Right, exactly.
Now, you included some really, really cool examples of scaffolding in action. And one that really stood out to me was this chemistry teacher who used tiered worksheets to teach stoichiometry and the ideal gas law. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So this teacher had grouped her students based on their, you know, existing understanding of the concepts. And so for her highest achieving group, she provided a standard worksheet. But for students who needed a little more guidance, she created like annotated versions or worksheets that included problem-solving strategies embedded in them.
Oh, wow. So everyone was still working towards the same learning objective.
Yes.
Just with those different levels of support.
Exactly.
That's brilliant. And it's that idea that you're really tailoring your teaching to the needs of your learners.
Yes, exactly. And I think this teacher's approach highlights a key element of effective scaffolding, which is it's really about meeting students where they are, but not sacrificing the complexity of what we're teaching.
Right.
Not dumbing it down, but really giving them the support that they need to get there.
And what I thought was so smart, you know, she included, I guess, like the answers on a separate page on all of the worksheets. So students were able to like self-check as they went, which seems so critical, especially in a subject like chemistry where things build on each other so quickly.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Having that immediate feedback loop is essential for students to kind of reinforce that understanding, but also for them to recognize that they need more support.
Yeah.
And it also takes some pressure off of the teacher to be the sole source of feedback. Right?
Totally.
So they're able to then provide more individualized support.
And speaking of individualized support, you shared a really fantastic example from a PE teacher who used modified equipment as a scaffold during a badminton unit.
Yes.
Which I just loved.
Yeah, so this is a great example of how we can adapt scaffolding to different learning styles and needs. She had a couple of students with visual impairments who were really struggling to track the shuttlecock. So her solution was to bring in larger rackets and beach balls.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
Right. So it gave them like a greater margin of error, you know, as we were first learning to play.
That is so smart. And I love this example too, because it really shows that like scaffolding is not about, you know, changing the activity.
Right.
It's about giving them the tools that they need to be successful in the activity.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that feeling of accomplishment and success is like so critical for building confidence and like motivating kids to like keep going. Totally.
Especially when they're learning something new, which can be a little scary or challenging sometimes. Now, before we kind of dive into some more of these examples, I wanted to take a moment to talk about the teacher's role in all of this, because it's really easy to get caught up in like all the tools and techniques, right?
Right.
But ultimately, don't you think it's really the teacher who's the most important scaffold?
100%. I mean, we can design the best worksheets or, you know, use the most sophisticated technology. But at the end of the day, that personalized guidance and feedback that a teacher provides is really irreplaceable.
It's that human element, right?
Yes, teachers are busy. They've got a million things going on. So when you're talking about implementing a strategy like scaffolding, classroom management has to be a huge part of the equation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Classroom management is key for any successful lesson, but especially when you're differentiating and, you know, providing these different levels of support, you've really got to stay on top of things.
So let's talk about some strategies for that. What are some things that teachers should really be thinking about, like from a classroom management standpoint, when they are planning a scaffolded lesson?
So I think one of the most important things is establishing really, really clear expectations from the get-go.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Students need to know, like, what are the procedures for independent work? What does it look like to collaborate with my partner if that's, you know, part of the activity? How do I get help from the teacher when I need it? Things like that.
It's about creating that predictability.
Yes.
Even within, you know, what is essentially a differentiated learning environment, so that not everybody's necessarily doing the same thing at the same time, but everybody knows what they should be doing.
Yes, exactly.
It's all about making sure those kids are using their time productively.
Right.
Even if they're not working directly with the teacher.
Exactly.
Which then in turn frees the teacher up to, you know, work with those small groups or those individual students who might need a little extra support on the main activity.
Right.
Oh, I love it. This is so good. Okay, this conversation has really just like solidified for me the importance of those like really intentional classroom management strategies when it comes to making scaffolding work, because it's not just about having the right tools and the right activities. It's about creating this like structured, supportive environment where students feel safe to like work at their own pace.
Hmm.
But before we move on to like another, I think, really fascinating aspect of scaffolding, which is purposeful partnering. So before we kind of like dive into some specific examples, can we just like back up for a second and talk about why this works? Like, what is it about purposeful partnering that makes it such an effective learning tool?
Yeah. So first of all, it's important to remember that this is not random grouping.
Right. It's not just like sticking kids in groups and hoping for the best.
No, no, not at all. This is really intentional pairing where you are thinking about their strengths.
This, it's not just about the cognitive benefits.
Right.
There's like a social emotional piece to this too, where, you know, it's about creating this classroom culture where collaboration is valued.
Yes.
Where it's okay to take risks.
Right.
And ask questions because you've got this like built-in support system with your partner.
And hopefully that judgment-free zone too.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So I'm sold. I'm sure our listeners are sold. But like, where do you even begin? If you're a teacher and you're like, okay, purposeful partnering sounds amazing, but like, what are my first steps?
Well, just like almost everything in teaching, it starts with assessment.
Right. We've got to know where our learners are at.
Yes, we have to know, like, what are their readiness levels?
Right.
In relation to whatever it is we're trying to teach.
So this is where all those formative assessments that we've talked about, like, throughout the entire, like, you know, history of this podcast.
Yes.
They come into play.
All those quick checks for understanding, those exit tickets, you know, just ways to kind of get a pulse on where students are.
Yeah.
Armed with that information, we can then start to think about, okay, how are we going to group our students? And we can think about it in a couple of different ways. Homogeneous grouping versus heterogeneous grouping.
Okay, break those down. What's the difference? And when might you choose one versus the other?
Okay, so homogeneous grouping is basically pairing students together who have really similar learning profiles.
Got it.
Or similar readiness levels, right? So maybe you're going to put all the kids who need more practice with fractions together.
Okay.
Or maybe you're going to put the kids who are ready for an extra challenge on that concept together.
Yeah, so it's like you're creating these little groups where everybody's kind of like working at the same pace.
Exactly, and this can be really helpful if you want to provide more targeted instruction.
Okay.
Right, so you are differentiating, but you're differentiating within the lesson.
Got it.
Now, heterogeneous grouping, on the other hand, is really about intentionally pairing students with diverse learning profiles.
Okay, so this might be like you're pairing your student who's really good at math with a student who finds math a little bit more challenging.
Exactly. Or maybe you're pairing a student who's a really strong visual learner
yeah.
with a student who needs to hear things.
Yeah, yeah.
And the idea here is that, like, the kids can kind of act as peer tutors for each other. So they're learning from each other. They're supporting each other's growth.
They all bring something different to the table, which I love. But with that, though, comes this need to be really intentional about their roles.
Yes.
Within those partnerships.
We've got to be really clear about who's doing what.
Yeah, because you don't want a situation where you've got, like, the kid who already gets it doing all the work.
Exactly.
While the other kid's just kind of like, well, all right.
Right.
You want everyone to feel like they have something to offer.
And that they're being challenged, I think, is
yes.
key. You don't want it to be, like, so far above one kid's level that it's just frustrating.
Totally. And I think, like, this actually brings us to, like, I think a really important point about scaffolding in general.
Yeah.
Whether we're talking about tiered activities or teacher support or purposeful partnering, like, ultimately the goal here is to get kids to a place where they can be independent.
Exactly. 100%.
Right, where we're giving them the tools and strategies and the confidence that they need so that eventually, like, we can start to take the scaffolding away and
Yes.
they can do these things on their own.
Right, because that's the goal, right? We don't want them to need us forever. We
Exactly.
want them to be independent, successful learners.
And that's what makes scaffolding so powerful because it's that bridge
Yes.
that gets them to that place.
I love that, the bridge analogy. We've come full circle.
We have come full circles, all connected.
It is.
Well, on that note, I think this has been such a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for like diving into all this research with me
My pleasure.
and to all of you for sending in these really thought-provoking materials. We'll be back next time with another deep dive.